Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
That's me. It's just us. Brian and Bryce are out on a top secret project over the next few days. So it is just us talking After Things. We had a fairly After Things-y kind of Weird Things, very business and creator kind of focused. Is there anything else on your mind here?
Man, you know what? I got a conversation to start to talk about. How many hours a week do you work?
You want to know what? I didn't. My friend Tamar, who is helping me organize my life business-wise, ran through it. I mean, I guess my there is the time that I'm on the air, right? And I think that is close to 20 hours a week, 20 more than that, maybe. But then there's the rest, right? And that, like, I've always had a hard time answering that question because I kind of feel like there's never a time where I'm not working to compare myself to a profession that I certainly have no business comparing myself to. It's kind of like a like fireman or police officer where it's like, the world dictates when I'm working, when you're working in a news kind of capacity. So like there's always a chance for me to do stuff.
I mean, I would say like when I'm eating, I'm not. I mean, I might be doing work with maybe on the phone doing a little, but I only eat when I'm eating. I'll bring work to work, you know, I'll bring work to eat with sometimes and sit there and work on notes and do that. But like if I'm having dinner with my girlfriend, I try to very much make it a point not to work. Sitting down watching Glow, you know, watching episodes of that, I'm not working. But I was trying to figure this out, like, how many hours a day do I actually spend working? And I would guess maybe 15. Like, because I can monitor part of it's by amount of time I spend in front of this computer here, because if I'm in front of this computer, I'm working, you know, I'm working on writing or coding or whatever, or doing something like that. So, or if I get up, I go over to, I have a counter where I sit at and I'll do notes and stuff. But I was thinking about that. Like, it's got to be at least 12 hours a day.
And how many hours a day are you up? Like, what is an average, an average wake up and an average sleep time?
I mean, my average sleep time is about 7 hours, I would say.
And you're up hours. You're up around when? You're in bed around when?
I'm usually up around 10:30 or so is usually my start time.
Mm-hmm.
I often get up earlier. I'll often get up at like 7:30, whatever, and then, you know, spend a half an hour reading the web or whatever, then go back and sleep for a few more hours or something if I can. So, but
and yeah, then, and then in bed, what, 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock?
Yeah. I'm in bed to like about 2 to 10, 3 to 10.
Yeah. I'm up at 6, down at about 10 these days. That's the new normal.
Yeah. Wow. So I get up and then, you know, my routine is if it's not a podcast day, I get up, I'll stumble over here, you know, have something to eat, start working a bit. If I get out around 11 or so, maybe I'll do a little work. And then if my girlfriend doesn't have school, we'll go to grab something to eat. Then I'll come back and park myself and work until it's dinner and work, eat, and then come back and work.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't regret a minute of it. I mean, I wish there were more hours in the day that I could work on the stuff I work on. And that's the thing is I know enough about sleep to know don't start. I can get by on 5 hours of sleep or so, but I know not to do that. I know that that's my understanding is that has a longer term effects. So I try not to do that. But
yeah, I've found, I mean, and you know me well, I'm an easily distracted person, and I have found that focus is greatly improved by sleeping at a regular time. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the biggest thing for me is just having learned what diet, exercise, and sleep. Shocker that this took me into my mid-30s to get a grasp on, but that makes the time that I have to work more potent. I wind up doing more because I can very easily get into, you know, not only the instinct to go screw around on the internet, but to justify it by, like, well, you know, look, I think this is important. I'm doing research. I'm learning more about these things. And it's not to say that that's not true, but it's also stuff that I could be doing once I got all my other work done. And that's where my, or at least the tasks that don't need to take a long time, I can elongate by my farting off.
So I wake up, like, I'll give you an example of my daily routine for the two people out there that care. I get up, right? And Mondays or Tuesdays, usually I get a call from my agent, you know, probably because my agent calls and then I have a conversation about whatever we're working on that week or whatever. And then I'll have that conversation. Sometimes I go back to sleep. And then, and also, by the way, I get up 10:30, but if I have a conference call at 7:30 in the morning, it's fine. I'm like, fine, set my alarm, I go do it. I got over the point of bitching about sleep because I'm like, oh, you know what? I'll be able to sleep again. Don't worry, you know.
Yeah.
There's always going to be more sleep in my life. Don't worry about, you know, I have a girlfriend that sometimes she has to get up early for class. I'm like, I'll set my alarm. It's fine. I'll get up, see you off, and then I'll go back to sleep. And it's just, I'm used to that. I trained myself to get used to that, you know, because I'm like, this is the way normal people sort of function. I get up maybe 10:30. And then I have a bunch of, I use, I think Feedly. So for my RSS feeds, RSS feeds are my primary way of getting my news. I have a handful of websites I check, but I go through my RSS feeds. There's usually about 100, 120 items. I scan through those in the morning, see what news items came up, read a couple things, whatever. Then I hit a couple different news sites to go see, just get kind of a, this is what they're saying. This is what they're saying. This is what they're saying. And I'm like, okay, I got to grasp what's going on. I probably hit I go to the SpaceX Reddit. I don't go anywhere else on Reddit other than like SpaceX or maybe the Tesla one, but I go to the SpaceX Reddit, see what's going on there. And then I'll hit like tech meme, you know, see what other items come up there on tech meme and then a couple things. So I probably spend about a half hour reading news doing that. And then I get up and then I go, if it's time to
that's in bed. So wake up, grab the phone or the iPad and you're rock and rolling there.
Yeah, because one of the things that I do is my workspace here, I have an iPad Pro right here that if I'm working and if I'm doing something like coding and I can watch a show, I'll watch a show on that. But there's no notifications, there's no Twitter, there's nothing. My main computer here on my iMac here, I have in my taskbar, there is, I don't even have Instant Messenger. The only thing I have is Skype, which is only there because of this show. Yeah. But I have no messaging applications for here. I don't, like, my Facebook, I can't even log in because I forgot my password. I will sometimes go check Twitter because Twitter's like, because I'm not like, I'm never talking to anybody. My email clients are normally closed.
Yeah.
I'll open up email, check my email. And it comes down to, I very much believe in you dictate your time. You cut out all interactions or notifications. Because when I want to sit down and focus on a thing, I don't want one of these media, I don't want Facebook to tell me so-and-so just posted some photos and I need to go look. I need to give up what I'm doing right now to go over here to go look at this stupid thing.
Yeah.
So, and even Twitter, I have no notifications for Twitter. And so I miss things. I miss out on a lot. I know I miss out on a lot. I was talking to my girlfriend about this. It's like, you know, I go through periods of my life where I work my ass off and I don't socialize as much. Mm-hmm. And then I go through, but then I see the benefits from that. And I do believe you should be social. I do believe you should have friends. I do believe that you should interact with people, but you know me, you know how much of the BS interactions I cut out, you know, like I just like, I'm not a guy to go hang out at a bar with a couple friends for 2 hours if I'm not going to be interested in the conversation.
Yeah. Oh no, totally. And part of that I think is, yeah, I think like you said, there's ebbs and flows to that. Like there are times where you are more willing to go and try to find social situations that you might enjoy, and then make a determination and figure it out. But that is often dictated by what the project is, right? Like what's happening?
I do things like I would, you know, every couple weeks or so, I might go to an event or a party or something I get invited to or whatever like this. I turned down, like, I'm at the point where, like, people stopped inviting me to just sort of, hey, we're getting together to go do this thing or whatever. You know, it's if I didn't have a girlfriend, you know, and I didn't talk to my other friends on a regular basis, I talked to you on a daily basis, I have like other friends I talk to, then I would feel as more at a loss. But I don't know. Like I went to like some rando party in LA I got invited to a while ago, and I'm like, the moment people start talking about food or dogs, their dogs, I need to go. Because that's what I, when I'm sitting around and all of a sudden, oh, I like this food and this dog. I'm like, these people have nothing to talk about. There's literally nothing to talk about. So this is the topic to try to do this. And I'm like, do I stick around here and for another hour or 2 hours with the most boring conversation possible, you know, or do I go home and go work on something I'm excited about? And I went home.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I would suspect part of the disconnect from folks listening would be finding what that is, right? Like, and identifying the task to go forward on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, that's just it. Because I'm at the point where I can see, for every hour I spend here, I can see a result in my life. For every, you know, every 10 hours I spend on writing, I can see a measurable improvement. And I can think of, like, 10 things that I need to do right now, you know, that I want to do, you know, that I should be doing right now that will help improve, you know, my overall success rate. And that's it. And I'm a big believer in, and again, I think I, you know, I encourage my friends and people like, yeah, no, socialize, have friends, have people, you can do that. But don't feel that, don't feel obligated to have, don't feel like you have to do what everybody else does. You know, I think the people who are, if you're trying to go for an amazing level of success, you don't do what everybody else does.
Yeah, and it's always been an interesting thing. The older I've gotten, the more I've learned it, and the more I've met people that have achieved a lot, is there is a healthy understanding to figuring out where you are different from others, where your motivations are different from others, and where your goals are different from others. And when you talk about that kind of stuff initially, I think it often brings to mind hostility for people that you are condemning or looking down or you know, on other people, or it's arrogant. And I think that that's a mistake to think of it like that, because I ultimately, we are all making a decision for ourselves to say what we want to do today and how we want to do it.
Yeah, I'm very different than my father and my brother. You know, my father spent 30 years in law enforcement. Now, after he retired from it, my father works. He has an eBay business where he sells fly rods and stuff. He gets these inventories of fly rods. He sells fly rods. He deals in those things because he knows that business. My father gets up 6:30 in the morning, goes out on his boat for like an hour or two. He lives right off the Intracanal. So goes out on his boat, comes back home, maybe he sleeps some more. Then he gets up and he works on his eBay business. He does that. He's involved with these different community groups, waterway cleanup, conservation groups, all of that. My father has a very full life thing. My brother, FBI agent, my brother gets up, does his FBI. He's got his daughters, does, you know, they have, you know, whatever dad contributions he does. His wife's amazing, Zazuri. Get the girls ready for school. Girls go to school. Wife goes to work. My brother goes to work. My brother comes home. They've got the volleyball games and stuff, and he does the family thing and all that. And they're both working. They're both building, and that's their thing. And so they spend a lot of time, you know, they work hard, and they socialize, and they do that. And when they're home from work, then they're home from work. But my brother then does, you know, he's on the SWAT team, so he does special details and stuff like that too. But, you know, the end of the day is like they have a normal life, and their choice and my choice, there's not, one's not better than the other. They're just different choices.
Well, and there's, you know, I think a lot of people listen to us because they want to do stuff by themselves, right? And
yeah.
Or they want to take the ideas in their head and they want to make something out of them, be it a job, be it applying it to another job. I actually got into a really good conversation with our friend Brett Rounseville last week, because the thing that I think we can all understand is that, look, what we've just given you is advice, right? Or at least at the very least sharing our experience from inside our own process. What oftentimes goes unsaid, and I almost think is very, very important, is being a good manager to yourself and trying to separate the boss from the artist and understanding mm-hmm. that there are two kind of different instincts. And that goes not only for being a taskmaster and keeping yourself on top of stuff, but also and also kind of killing your darling sometimes and saying, all right, look, we pushed at this button for a while. We got to either rethink what we're doing or we got to cut bait on it. Like, something's got to happen here. But also to understand when you're sputtering, you know, when you're, you know, when you do need some fresh air, when you, you know, can managing yourself
mm-hmm.
is the foundation of everything else that I think we've talked about on this show.
I feel like in the last few years, I've gotten a better grasp of that. I think I could be totally self-deluded because I've known that in areas where I've applied all the hard-won lessons, like in writing, like, you know, I have a pace and a pattern to writing. When I need to write a novel, I know how to write a novel. You know, I can write, you know, I wrote two novels this year, I think two, on top of all the other things, you know, shooting, you know, TV special and some other stuff. And so, and that came from time management. I realized that, like, I can do two things at once, three things at once. That was when I was in the middle of producing a show, training, doing the show, working on a novel, and other. I said, this is three at once. I'm over my capacity right now. You know, and that was, I expressed, like, now I know. And it wasn't these things, like, I couldn't control how it happened, what was going to, you know, the order these things happen. But I learned a lot about that. And so I think that, like, yeah, as managing, like, I noticed, like, my girlfriend's editing her short film. And so, like, I'll go watch, I'll help, you know, give her my, you know, some comments, some thoughts or whatever on that. But I only like to do it for like 45 minutes at a time. Because it's like, oh, yeah, like, this is sort of like 45 an hour. This is my max. And then I got to go up and go do something else. But then an hour later, you know, like with writing, like, I'll be like, oh, sometimes I go all the way through. But I'm like, no, I'm going to take a break. I'm not going to go put my attention on another project. That's the worst thing in the world to do. But I'm going to go for a walk. Reset the RAM, whatever. And then I'll come back and do it. And that's the dangerous. I have friends that they're writers that don't produce as much as they could. And I'll go like, well, I'm working on three books right now. I'm like, well, that's a horrible idea. Like, oh no, when I need a break from this book, I go work on this other book. But I'm like, that's like, it's like a race car that, like, oh, we're going to take a break from doing, you know, this race. We're going to go put it in this, like, a marathon. And I need a break. I'm going to do a 10K next week instead of, you know, a 20, whatever, you know. It's like, no, that's not how it works. But it's also doesn't mean in your off season that you get out of shape. I mean, anyhow, my metaphors are, you know, collapsing on each other. But my point is that, like, there's a difference between, like, okay, take a breath, take a breather, versus now I'm going to get away. I'm going to climb out the window.
Yeah. And I think part of it is knowing yourself. But that's easier said than done, because I think a lot of what I've seen of your process, part of what helped cement it was success. And mm-hmm. and seeing, like, okay, I'm happy with this process to this result. And so now I can focus on refining and getting there. Not to say that you weren't working on this the entire time and you found a thing that you could do, but I think what gets in folks' heads sometimes is like, well, all right, I could be refining this process, but what if I get to the end and I refine this process and it's a bad process that produces bad content?
Well, I would say, and this comes up, we right now in our comment section, Refractal Studios brought up a great point. It says, I seem to be working on a dozen projects and don't get anywhere. The most important lesson that I have learned is I have to pick one thing and throw 100% at it. I have to pick one thing. After you do that and you learn the patterns to how that happened, to replicate that, when I wanted to write novels, having never written a novel before, I had to say, I'm going to almost literally lock myself into a room until I produce a novel. You know, I'll let myself out for food, no friends, no TV, no social life, nothing until a novel is pre-created. I had to Justin watch this process happen, you know, and it was I know that I'm going to start here. And at the end of this period, I better have a damn novel. And it took me 10 days. 10 days later, I had a novel. And then I said, oh, now I know I can do this thing. How can I improve this process? you know, how can I, what worked, what didn't work, what helped me get along faster. And I said, man, like, outlining kind of really out radical. Outlining's great. Note cards. How do I get a note card? How do I do this? And then I wrote enough. I took, said, I think this worked. And then I said, next time around, let me do this again. And I did it again, you know, and I did it again. And I got to the point where I could still write stuff in a shorter period of time. I could write stuff in a longer period of time, whatever, as long as I paid attention to the process and I improved the process. And now my process is really, 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 really good for me, you know, but I picked one thing, and that's the problem. If you're creative, the problem is, this is the creativity disease, is you will always invent a reason to do something else. When it gets hard, when it's not fun, your creative part of your brain will go, you know, this other idea is really cool too. You know, this other book, maybe this is a better book. You don't know. You do not know. At the end, you started this project, whatever it was, because it sounded like a good idea. And unless you had some radical new information that Congress has outlawed what you're going to do, the worst thing to do is something that you spend a good amount of time figuring out what you're going to start on. Then once you start, finish it. Like, I've been reading so many stories about, like I mentioned this before, like Airbnb. Everybody told them it's a dumb idea. Now, the initial idea they had versus what we have now has changed, but they stuck with the core idea of allowing people to rent space. Now Airbnb is a success. There's a lot of things like this. Twitter started off with a very different product until they came up with the Twitter thing, and then where they ended up at. They had a team. They knew they could make something cool.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that is a good lesson of make it the thing. Divorce quality and divorce, you know, the analysis of your process until the thing is done. Get the thing mm-hmm. done by any cost, and then decide, oh, okay, this thing wasn't quite what I wanted. It's not quite as good as it could be. Good news is I can always do another thing, and I can always refine the process. And mm-hmm. that's if you look at it like that, then there is, I think, a different way of understanding this kind of stuff.
The best successes, some of the biggest successes. Apple started off as a company that catered to hobbyists by selling bare bones, no housing, just computer boards, just the boards. That's what they started as. They were another hobbyist company that said, we're going to build this. Okay. Apple said, and then after they did the Apple One, Steve Jobs, people were like, we could use a case around this. A case would be nice for this. Now, they had a beautiful circuit board. Steve Wozniak, and, you know, one of the most gifted engineers ever. And just, man, talk about the right man at the right time. Steve Jobs, as far as being a visionary and understanding really where things are going and his vision on that, the two of them together. They started off by selling these boards because they did what they did before. They'd sold little phone freaking boxes and stuff. They sold other gadgets, and they had this really cool one, like, hey, we can make some money selling these boards. People were like, hey, you know what? Could you get a case? And then Steve Jobs is like, yeah, let me look into that. Like, yeah. Cases. Like, I don't want the case to suck. I want the case to look good. And he's like, I want it to look better than other things out there. And, you know, it should probably be beige because Cuisinarts are beige and whatnot. And then, I don't know if you heard this today, Apple is the biggest company in the world, but it started off with, we're going to do this one thing and we're just going to see it through and do it well. They sold those boards and they listened and reacted and said, oh, wow, this is where we can be. Microsoft. Okay. One of the first Microsoft products Bill Gates did, and some of the early people did that, was like Bill Gates, they built a traffic sensor. You know, when it's just Bill Gates and his friends, they built like a traffic sensor to measure traffic because they're like, the new computers were going to be really big. And then they're like, yeah. Well, maybe then we'll, what can we do now? Like, oh, there's this new computer system, the Altair. Well, let's make a version of BASIC for it. Let's make some software for this. And then a few years later, an opportunity strikes, then Microsoft's huge. You get the, you know, Google, we want to search. We're going to build search. Sergey Brin and Larry Page, I guarantee you, if you told them in the early, you know, mid-90s, you guys are going to become the biggest advertising platform in the world, would have rejected that idea.
Yeah.
That would have been far away from where they wanted to do, but they followed through. So many examples of that, of where it starts off where we're just going to do this thing. Amazon was, we're going to deliver books. It's going to be books. We're going to get books to your house better than anybody else. And their competition ultimately wasn't going to be B. Dalton or Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
Their competition is every other retailer in the world now. And now, as we talk about AWS, Amazon has eaten the web. Amazon is eating retail. The race is on between Apple and Amazon. Who will be the first $1 trillion company? Jeff Bezos is now the richest man in the world. he focused on one thing and what he learned from that thing in the Amazon story of improving logistics and customer satisfaction. Once he went there, it was like, this is how we improve customer satisfaction. Well, can we apply this to other businesses? Yes, we can. And then they got into providing internet services in the same way. I digress. So that's the point.
Focus on the process. Make the thing. And then if the thing isn't what you want, refine the process and make another thing. But that's,
yeah.
You know, when we talk about decision paralysis and we talk about, breakdowns in the system, like, I think the biggest thing is everything gets easier the more you do it. And everything gets easier the more you understand it, probably more, mm-hmm. more accurately. And that's a process in and of itself, for sure.
Yeah, you know. Somebody in the chat mentions I try to work on a few novels every night. I don't know if you're being
that's a wrestling parlance for drink a few beers every night, brother.
Right. My point, I was gonna say I don't flip. My point is that like I know people who do that though.
Yeah.
I know people who go do that. Okay. And I know that was as a joke, but I'm saying like I know people who actually do that, and they think that like in this amount of time I will get this done. I have one actual friend who you know who's working on three novels right now. And in the problem, I'm like, it's not like you're like, oh, well, it'll take me three times as long, but then I'll have three novels. Like, no, it's not like you add up, you know, 12 weeks for one book, 12 weeks for another and 12 weeks for another. It will take even longer in my experience. There are exceptions to this rule. So,
well, and I think you're cheating the two of the novels at the very least, right? Because
yeah.
You could be learning a lesson. You're always going to learn a lesson in writing. You're always going to get better in writing. You're always going to be focusing on stuff. So it's like, all right, well, that second novel could have been better because you could have applied the lessons that you got from finishing the first novel. Yeah, the third novel could have been better because you would have had lessons from both.
Refractal Studio says multitasking is a myth. Completely agree. I have friends who claim they're good at multitasking, and I will tell you to a T, they're horrible at it, and they're absolutely horrible at it. You can go, I'm going to do this thing now, and then I'm going to go do this other thing because they're all the work that needs to be done. But I have not met a person who tells me they're good at multitasking that I observably think they really, and I multitask by doing two things at once. Like, oh yeah, I'm going to have a conversation with you while I type. And it's the worst conversations I ever have. I have friends who do this like, oh no, it's okay. I'm listening. And I'm like, I hate it when I do it to people. I hate it when I'm talking to somebody and I go look something up or whatever. And I try to, I'm just pulling this thing up. I'm not reading a thing. I hate it when it's done to me, and I don't like it when I do it to other people. But also when you do it to yourself, it's just bad.
Yeah. I mean, and also you're not pulling anybody.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like if a friend pulls out a phone, I'll stop talking. Not because I'm angry, because like, sometimes you got to respond to something. Sometimes you got to respond.
Yeah,
and I'm like, oh no, it's all right. I'm like, no, I'm not like being like, oh, how dare you? I'm like, no, like I'm sure you pulled it out because it's important. Like, I'll just wait until you're done.
Yeah.
Because what I'm saying, I can finish, you know, I can complete my sentence, you know, a minute later. I have a couple friends I've gotten on their case about this. I'm like, listen, like, I don't care that you are part of a connect. It doesn't bother me you're part of a connected world and have other people you have responsibilities to.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want you to feel an obligation to pretend to listen to me while you're reading or writing something else.
100%. You got any picks?
My pick is,
Is there anything, maybe a tool that would?
No, I'm not gonna pick. I'm just trying to figure out how to phrase it.
Okay.
There are two books that I heartily recommend if you're looking at trying to be a high output, really, really push yourself to the next level. Okay. One of them is The Everything Store, which is by Brad Stone. I think that's the title of it. The Everything Store. Okay. Yeah. Brad Stone. That's the story of Jeff Bezos and the agent. This book now was written, 4 years ago, this book came out. 4 years ago, Amazon was a giant now. Since then, if you look at and wealth is not it depends. There are many different ways to accumulate wealth. OK, and there are some people who have inherited wealth. Some people just start around long enough. And it's not a judge of your success in life. Let me put it this way. It's not you should never use that as a metric to say like, oh, this was, you know, this is a success in life. If you're looking, though, as did what somebody do really work, you know, that's a different case. And so if you look in the case of, I'm trying to find out, like, how far ahead, like, Jeff Bezos is, his net worth, okay, is now around hovering $130, $135 billion, okay? To give you an example of how wealthy Jeff Bezos is now from the success of Amazon, do you know the second wealthiest man in the world is?
Bill Gates.
Bill Gates. Bill Gates has given away parts of his money, but still not vast amounts of his money yet. Bill Gates is at $92 billion, and Warren Buffett at, you know, like 91. So Bill Gates and Warren are there, okay? So the point is that, like, between, I mean, the difference between Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates is that Bezos has got like 40, almost half a much again. Jeff Bezos's wealth accumulation is the largest we've ever seen in the history of the planet. There's arguments like it's a percentage of overall wealth. It's a different thing.
Yeah.
That accumulation of wealth is, and again, it's in stock. It's in stock. It's not like it's sitting in people like, oh, you know, he should give this money to this, whatever. This money is in stock and ownership of a company. Those are infantile sort of observations, in my opinion. The point, though, is that accumulation of wealth from following one thing through consistently showing you is, I can't even conceive of it. Can't even conceive of it. And I can't even, like, and I don't know what I don't envy that. I'll put it that way. Be in that, because it's like every relationship, every person you have is based upon that, whatever. But it's an amazing sort of thing. But anyhow, the everything store, you follow how did the richest man in the world become the richest man in the world? That's sort of what the early days of the richest man in the world in a garage they rented to start Amazon on his knees, helping pack boxes. And there's he loves to tell the story about how he's talking to one of the early employees about this, is they're on their knees in this garage, and their knees are sore. It's late at night. They're trying to pack these books to get sent out. And Bezos tells us a story about how to solve the problem, understanding what the problem was, is he turns to the employee next to him, and Bezos goes, you know what we need is knee pads, right? And the employee turns to him and says, what we need are tables. And that's Bezos going, your idea is better. I'm going to use that idea.
Yeah.
You know, he uses an example of himself not understanding, you know, what this, there are no trillionaires out there, trillionaires in this regard. Absolutely are not. Unless you're talking about somebody who's a head of state who stole it. Richest man in the world is Bezos. Trillionaires in other currencies for sure, but richest ever is Bezos in the valuation of Amazon. But that's an example. The other one is the Elon Musk biography by Ashley Vance. It's another example of, you look at early days of Elon Musk working on X.com before it got merged with PayPal, and he would tell employees, like, they're working from this little loft, whatever, apartment, and he would be, you know, coding at night. You say off the books on Saudis. It's not, no.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to get into this. Like, I can tell you what the Prince Ali we trust, this sort of stuff, their valuations there and who owns it, whatever. But I understand what you're saying, though. But point is, anyhow, as far as, you know, Musk is concerned, you know, this is a guy that at night, you know, he would say, like, hey, when you come in the morning, if I'm asleep, just kick me awake, because there's like a little beanbag, he'd go fall asleep and just kick me awake and he'd go back to code. He talked about the idea that, like, you have to work three times as hard as everybody else, you know, three times as hard, you know, just put in, you know, all that hours. Because then he talks about how, like, if you're working three times as hard in 6 months time, you're a year ahead of your competition.
Yeah.
So, those books. But Bezos's Everything Store, highly recommend it.
So. Awesome. Mine's going to be a little bit simpler. And it's free for probably everybody. If you got a phone with one of them, their timer apps, time yourself out. When Andrew asked me about, how much time that I worked, you know, I tried to do, and I was unsuccessful for much of it. Trying to figure out exactly what I was doing, when I was doing it. Like, if I clocked in and I clocked out, like, this is what my time spent is. Before you focus on your life, it really helps to understand what your life is. Not what you think it is, not what you want it to be, but where it is right now. And there's really not a lot of judgment there. It is just, it helps you put, if you are like me, and I suspect that many of you are creatively, there's no problem you can't make scarier, and there's no risk that you can't convince yourself is so insurmountable that it affects how you think. And you don't realize how quickly you make those transitions. And a huge part of it is just understanding where you are first and then trying to make those changes going forward.
Yeah. It's understanding your time management, understanding, you know, where these things go is just, it's a very, very critical sort of point to sort of understanding, what your time should be spent doing and how to allocate it with doing that. Last thing, it's because of the comments keeps coming up, like the Saudis and all that. Justin's shaking his head, but no, it's a fair point because there might be people listening who are like, sure. No, what about this? If you add up everybody who's in the House of Saud, you know, you're going to find there's a large amount of wealth, but it's individual, it's owns. So it's like, you know, what's the Rothschild family, you know, what's that worth, whatever. And so, and also when you get it tied into state money, what is Vladimir Putin worth? Whatever he wants to be, you know, he can allocate, pretty much has enough control to allocate the entire Russian economy to say that it's his. Those are things where it's also, you don't have clear titles of who owns what, whatever. We just saw the case of Saudi Arabia, the prince apparent who's come in and said, nope, you don't own this. This actually belongs to the government, and back and forth. And so they're like, yes, there are people like the Forbes list is not the definitive list. There are people who actually work their way to get off of it, whatever. But when you look at actual foundational wealth, what's there, whatever, you know, it gets murky. So I just, to address that, I want to say that is a fair point on your part, whatever. I don't want to just be like, no, you're wrong. So
there we go.
Yeah. It's funny. It's for audio listeners watching Justin shake his head.
It's just, you get into the chat and all of a sudden everybody starts saying things
it's a point that they brought up. It's a very good point worth addressing, though.
It is.
I just quickly went past like people who are involved in government wealth, whatever, because that's, it gets into a much murkier thing, you know, of that. So, yeah. Richest person in Venezuela. Oddly enough, Hugo Chavez's daughter. How did that happen?
Weird. She is a hard worker.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Everybody, it's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.